art, culture, politics, activism. Now, art in the pandemic age. Have you ever wondered why artists do what they do? What is their purpose? What are they trying to accomplish? I'm your host, Kyle Roman. Welcome to Artivism Now. Artivism, defined, is a portmanteau word combining art and activism. How is it that artists push the boundary of their medium? How do they move societies forward? How do they resolve issues in their neighborhoods, both local and worldwide? These questions are what we set out to answer by interviewing artists locally and the world over. We will get answers to those questions that artists put out there in the community. On this episode of Artivism Now, we welcome Sunena Gupta, Kathak dancer, choreographer, all the way from Singapore. All right, welcome Sunena Gupta to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, wonderful. So we have our first official dancer choreographer on Artivism Now. I think it's pretty awesome that you're joining us, and there's so much of your work to get into. I can't wait to hear more about it. Your main medium is obviously dance, but it's a specific style of dance that's native to a specific place. Would you be able to break down that for us?
Yeah, so my dance form is called Kathak, and so it's an ancient Indian classical dance form. So in India, there's actually 9 classical dance forms, and this one is the only one from North India. And I picked it up when I was around 7. I think a lot of Indian girls, when they're young, they start going for dance classes. And I really enjoyed it because in general, I think it's fun. I grew up out of India, so it was fun to kind of have something related to India in my life every week where I was going for this dance class and meeting other young girls. But it's also, so Kathak, out of all the classical dance forms, it's known as the art of storytelling in India. And the word Kathak actually means one who tells a story. So that's what we kind of get at in the dance form, is telling a lot of traditional story types, especially ancient mythologies and some of those stories that we hear when they're younger. We do a lot of that in Kathak, and it can also be very fast paced. It's footwork oriented, a lot of fast paced movements and spins. So that's a little bit about the dance form. And even within Kathak, there's so many different styles. They specifically come from Jaipur, from Lucknow, and from Banaras, which are 3 places in North India. And so I've been trained in the Jaipur style and have a little bit from the other ones as well. But yeah, so I really enjoyed it because it's of the storytelling aspect, which is kind of what I've been working on in my artivism work. I've been using that element to move a little bit further from the traditional storytelling to using the traditional style, but telling contemporary stories and issues that I've kind of seen around me that I feel need a voice through dance.
Yeah, it definitely comes out in the work as well. And I love that, I think a lot of times traditionally with the arts, there's a definite pull to the traditional and to carrying forth traditions within culture, and you find it in American theater, American musical theater, you find it in you know, painting as well. It does take a lot sometimes to kind of break from that tradition, or even maybe adapt from that tradition. Have you had any sort of, you know, feedback on, you know, the steps that you are taking maybe beyond the traditional dance form?
Mm-hmm. So I think so far, at least, it's been really widely appreciated that I am, everything that I've done is strictly within the traditional Kathak guidelines, I'd say, but it's just more, instead of telling stories from centuries ago, I'm using the stories that I see around me, including my own personal experiences. So I think that's a refreshing twist for a lot of the audience. There is a really appreciative audience for Indian classical arts in general. And so I think it's nice for them, and especially for the younger audiences who feel like it might be more relatable to use this mix of traditional and contemporary. So, and I think it does help to kind of reach a wider audience of, there's a little bit of something for those who like a very traditional form, and then those who like a little more contemporary twist. So that's kind of the angle that I've been trying to get at.
I think that's brilliant. An angle to really, the original intent was to tell stories, and, you know, and a performing artist tells a story from here to an audience over there, right? And I could see another connection in the way that you are utilizing the art form to tell this, the modern stories, is now it's not going to be just the older generation translating that story to the younger generation. Now it's going to be a conversation transactionally back the other way, right? Where the younger generation can interpret the messages from your work and you know, kind of school the older generations on it. Is that something that you find happening, creating that dialogue?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly what I've been trying to do, which is more of the conversation part and make it a little bit more interactive rather than purely perceived as like a performing art that's given from the artist to the audience. Yeah. I think it's important for there to be that dialogue and that shared experience between the stage and the audience.
Absolutely. The shared experience, you said it right there, because, you know, I find that also in some of the other performing arts as well, is it really does kind of the, you know, for me, the conversations on the way out of the theater are what you want to hear and what you want people to have. You know, it shouldn't be about like, oh, where are we going for dinner, or whose house are we going to, or whatever. It should be like about the material. And I can imagine that there's a lot of material discussions from audience members leaving your performances. Is that something that you've been a part of or witness to?
Yeah, so I personally think it's really important that I can present something that leaves the audience thinking about a certain message or topic afterwards, because there's a lot of Indian classical art out there, but I think one thing that I feel like I can offer and would like to offer is a little bit more of a fresh perspective on the themes that I bring up. And I really want there to be some kind of conversation that happens afterwards. So the way I see it is that my performance is kind of the start of the conversation, and in that the dancing is the language, I guess, where I'm kind of bringing things up, and then it's open to interpretation or conversations afterwards where on things that I feel are important to discuss.
Yeah, that's, you know, should be the main intent for all artists, right? And oftentimes we find that sometimes art solely functions as entertainment, when in reality, it's you know, it's a lot of artists look at it as a responsibility to A, tell the story like Kathak does, and then to B, to start the dialogue, conversations that are going to be happening further and further beyond the performance space. So after viewing your work, I definitely feel like there are conversations going on, and you're bringing light to many issues that that need light brought to them. You know, one organization and cause that is, you know, means a lot to you is Umid, right? Mm-hmm. Would you be able to walk us through what Umid represents and what type of work that you've done within that?
Yeah, so Umid is the Hindi and Urdu word for hope. And so that was actually my first big public production. And so that the topic for that was mental health, which is something that I care about a lot and that I've seen a lot of people struggle with, including myself. And so it's something that I really wanted to bring out, because reflecting on everyone's experiences, I realized that it just wasn't talked about enough. And obviously the audience for my performances are mostly in the South Asian community, South Asian diaspora. And I think especially in that community, there is a lot of stigma about even talking about it. And so I thought, as I was kind of building up my platform and community of dance appreciators, I thought it would be a good way to bring up this conversation, because they might be coming to watch the dance, but if I was able to use that to start these conversations on mental health and remove social stigma, raise awareness, kind of guide people to more resources, it would start a lot more conversations. Mm-hmm. So that was really the aim behind doing that. And it was very successful, because I mean, so it was my dance theater production about mental health. And it was nice because I started it at, I did the first performance around 2 years ago in Singapore, which is my hometown. And I later went to perform it in London, in New York, San Francisco, and then in several cities around India. So in that, there was definitely a lot of conversations that was started. I was able to have a lot of discussion afterwards, and was invited to things like panel discussions and seminars with college students to just get people going, and kind of more than anything, let them know a little bit more about the vocabulary of mental health, so that those who are struggling but don't really know what to do about it, they kind of have a starting point to start a conversation. And those who have experienced it or maybe on the other side are, they're able to reach out and be a little bit more aware of signs and symptoms in people around them. And so the whole idea of that was Umid, which was hope, that it is a very natural thing to go through mental health struggles, but there is hope at the end, and it, you do get through it.
Yeah, it's a great message, and you're right in talking about how culturally it does come across as something that's kind of taboo to talk about, you know, something that is difficult for a lot of people to confront or admit in their own life, and just you you know, coming forward and talking about that you've struggled with mental illness before, you know, that really does kind of open the door for people to start talking about their own mental health. And I think that's a brave thing to do in, you know, a prevailing world culture attitude towards mental health, in which, you know, it's kind of goes invalidated sometimes. And so I love the fact that you're bringing light to it now. Within Kathak, there's, like you had said, there are, you know, certain, maybe not rules, but maybe styles or, you know, kind of techniques within Kathak. How do those help to translate the issues or the pain of mental health?
Yeah, so I think that's a really interesting question, because within Kathak, there's so many different techniques and traditional styles that we can use. And so, as I was mentioning earlier, that I've done everything within like the guidelines of Kathak, but kind of pushed up the boundaries as much as I can. And so in that, there's like the most traditional style, which is a style that's passed down through generations. And so I've kind of retained a little bit of that in my performance. And we have these nine moods that we talk about that we present in Indian classical dance. And so with that, I was really able to start with like going from a really happy phase to fear, to anger, to sadness, to rejuvenation, and then coming out to hope. So I was able to go through the full spectrum of emotions that someone would go through when they're going through a journey of mental illness. And so in that way, it was really interesting for me to also learn so much more about using these technicalities to present such a contemporary concept. And yeah, so it is a very expressive art form. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different types of music as well, like some sections where we're kind of depicting the anger, it will be like a purely percussion based piece. But sometimes when we're kind of showing a little bit more of the happy, upbeat things, it will be like the whole orchestra of Indian instruments. And so I think there's something for dance lovers, also music lovers, and then people who like listening to stories. I think it kind of combines all of that into a dance theater production. And when the overarching message is one of mental health, it is hopefully something that is able to resonate with each person in the audience.
Yeah, and once again, it's Sunena Gupta, SunenaGupta on Instagram, and sunenagupta.wordpress.com is your website. Now, there's some fascinating material on your website. You have it titled as an online portfolio for your work, both as writer, dancer, and dreamer. I love that part. Mm-hmm. We need more dreams right now. We need the right dreams to happen right now. You know, I think that's really cool. And you have your videos posted on there for some of your dance material. And you also cite, you did a dance number for September, Suicide Prevention Month, and Alopecia Awareness Month. And the title is it Siyahi?
Yeah, Siyahi.
Siyahi, Ink of Black Fear. Is there any way that you could possibly speak on that dance number and then the causes of alopecia awareness and suicide prevention, how they relate to it?
Yeah, so Siyahi was actually one of the sections within my Umid's dance production. And so that was the section right in the middle where largely telling the story from my own perspective. So it was kind of the part where someone's experiencing the lowest points, a very depressive period in their life, a lot of fear. That was the main element that I was trying to bring out. Mm. And so in that piece, what I had done was I was kind of trying to show what it felt like to be experiencing an invisible illness, like a mental illness. And so I was showing what it might look like inside someone's head, which is a lot of confusion. And I'd use the theme of vultures to kind of be taking in and out of like as different thoughts kind of feeding into your brain and confusing you. And that fear element, that was what I was trying to show with the piece. And I had posted it in September for Suicide. So I will share something that I had experienced myself and the ongoing mental struggles of having something like that. And then a lot of my fundraising for Omid, I used it as a fundraiser to raise funds for youth suicide prevention organizations. So in most of the cities that I went to, the net profits would go to an organization there that would help with youth suicide prevention resources. And so it was really linked to these two causes that I went on the whole Omid journey. And so I thought it was most appropriate to create a video of a short piece from my production.
Yeah, and the videos are amazing. They're very dramatic in tone and really capture, you know, the essence, the message that you're putting out there. I commend you with your work on mental health and suicide prevention. It's something that is at the forefront of my mind too, as a arts educator as well. Anytime that, you know, art can work to heal, you know, I personally feel like it's doing the job it was intended to do. And so what are your thoughts on the healing aspect of art? Because it's evident in a lot of the material that you post.
Yeah, so I am a strong believer of using art to heal, because I think myself reflecting on my own journey through alopecia and mental health issues, dance was definitely one place where, or with any art form for that, in that case, it kind of puts you in a space where your whole focus is on just creating your art. And especially with dance, all of my focus is always on the movements and expressions, and I was so fully immersed in that. And in that aspect, it's kind of a form of meditation and healing. I feel that it didn't matter what else was going on in my life for that 1 or 2 hours that I'm in the dance studio. I am just Sanena as a dancer who is focused, I have all my focus on just what I'm creating. And I think anyways, there's a lot of literature out there on art as healing and the creative process and how that kind of helps you go through difficult times. And because that's something that I experienced myself, it's something that I encourage a lot of people to go into. And it doesn't have to be dance. It's kind of any passion that you can be fully immersed in that has nothing to do with you as a working professional or as a student, in my case, when I started dancing. And so I am, and I think you are too, a very strong believer of using art as healing. And I think it is a very important aspect.
Yeah, it's definitely, and you know, it's evident and that it's important to your art form, and it just pours out of it, which I think is makes it so unique, and especially in the way that you are adapting a traditional art form to modern times. You know, it's a tough thing to do, and you know, facing a lot of barriers that you no doubt have faced. I think you should definitely, if it means anything, just be insanely proud about the work that you've been doing, because I feel like it's a great message for young artists everywhere, you know, like the responsibility of the young artist to build upon the foundation that's been laid for them, right? And I feel like in your work, you're doing that. And, you know, maybe other people are doing it within Kathak. I don't know. But you yourself, you're doing it in your own way that's unique to your own personal, your own life. And you're pouring your life into your work. And it's definitely evident. And anybody who can drop by the website and watch these videos, they'll definitely feel that same way. So thank you for doing that for us and putting your work out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Is it okay for us to pivot to the next subject?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. So we will get into another great number that you have a video for. It's a multifaceted project that you'd put together. The song is called Ashkenam. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, Ashkenam.
Ashkenam. Okay, and it's adapted from Faiz's poetry and translates to a dedication. And this is a dedication to a very specific set of people in a very specific situation. Would you be able to walk us through that?
Yeah, so the piece, Ashkenam, as you said, is an adaptation from Faiz's poetry, who's a really famous Urdu poet. And so I personally really enjoy his poetry, and I found this piece that was turned into a song and is specifically the way I presented it was targeted as a dedication to the citizens of Kashmir. And in that, it could be the citizens who are living there today, who have lived there in the past, and all the different groups that are part of so Kashmir is a conflict region. That's what is being internationally recognized as. And it's also a very, very, one of the most beautiful parts of South Asia, I think. And so this piece really is a dedication to those people who have had any type of history or experience there and have been affected by the wider conflict, which has been going on for decades. And I wanted to do it once again for just to start conversations because, so I've grown up outside of South Asia in Singapore, and I think it's important for everyone who has roots and links in South Asia, but who's living outside, to still talk about the issues that are going on in South Asia, because I think there's different perspective when you're outside and when you're there, and there's a lot that everyone can do for international organizations and things to help out, because it really came from a place of thinking about especially the children that are born into this conflict. They don't have a choice, and they're the ones that kind of, the Kashmiri citizens are the ones that bear the brunt of the conflict, even though a lot of them are purely just have been born into it, and they might not fully know, they don't see it from the outside, so it's a very different perspective. And I think with this, it can, there's a lot of different perspectives in such a conflict, but it's also, so I studied at Berkeley, at UC Berkeley, so I think with pieces like this, it is kind of the Berkeley student in me that's kind of thinking about what can we do from sitting so far away, and how can we voice our opinions or feelings and kind of help out in that way.
Yeah, and you, you know, your work as a writer in breaking down the conflict is evident on your website, like we had said earlier, sunanagupta.wordpress.com. If anybody wants to read, there's also kind of like an accompanying article that you wrote, breaking down the conflict and, you know, the different people that you are dedicating this project to. And recently, just I think it was today, there was someone that had posted an article to TRT World about the mental health epidemic in Kashmir due to a perpetual lockdown that actually started 6 months before the actual pandemic started. Do you have any insight into, you know, the mental health side of what people are dealing with in the Kashmir region due to this extended lockdown?
Yeah, so their lockdown actually started on August 5th, and that was more of, that was not related to the pandemic, obviously, it was March before, but I think the reason why my heart really went out to these Kashmiri citizens even more was because, so now the whole world has been under lockdown in some aspect or another, and it's a lot more relatable for everyone to kind of feel how difficult it is to be in lockdown and not know when it's going to end. And so when I had posted my piece, it was when Kashmir had been under lockdown for 1 year. So I posted on August 5th, and my message was that so some of us had been under lockdown for 3-4 months, but just to think that we don't know when we're going to be in a different position, when how this pandemic is going to go forth, it's kind of a very relatable, hopefully it will make us feel more for those who have been under this situation for a lot longer. And there's obviously a lot of differences in the cause and the features of lockdown, but it's kind of just, I think with art, a lot of it is kind of reaching straight from the artist's heart to the audience's heart. And so that was something I was hoping to do with my piece.
Yeah, and if people, I highly, highly recommend watching A Dedication to Kashmir, Ajganam, on the WordPress site, sunandagupta.wordpress.com. If you are looking to be moved, you will be moved by this piece. So thank you for putting this together and bringing light to another situation that, you know, is to a lot of people isn't really on their radar because of other things going on in the world, when in reality, this is just as relatable to any one of us. And no matter where we live in this great earth, we can relate to the issues of Kashmir, and definitely am thankful that you're bringing light to a situation that's difficult to bring light to. Like you had said on your article, 7 decades long of at least on paper freedom that hasn't really been enacted officially. Is that something that you want to maybe get into in terms of what Kashmir is able to do at this point?
So I think it's, so this is something that I've also studied a little bit during my time as a student in Berkeley, and something I've just been interested in general. And it's difficult to really say much about the Kashmir conflict. I also do recognize that I don't have specific links to the people in Kashmir. So I'm not sure how much I can really say about that. But I think, like, if it's like going back to the dance aspect, the reason why I think I do have something that I can say about it is because through dance, I'm able to, like, here I am saying that I don't know how much I can say about the political part, but through dance, I can express the emotions. And I think that's linking to Omid's Kashmir conflict and a lot of the different issues that I've picked up. Another one was the Delhi riots, which was somewhere in February earlier this year, is that some people might not want to talk about these issues, might not feel comfortable talking about these issues, but through dance, there's no words. It's just a whole different language. And you might not want to go to a seminar or lecture to learn about the topic, but you can get a little taster from watching an art performance about it. So, yeah.
Absolutely. You're spot on with that, because, you know, any time that we engage in some of the official state language or, official government language about situations, a lot of times our own minds are framed by that language. And I think that's a great point that you brought up, is through the art form, which all artists, have this available to them. You can speak to the people about their own realities without having to utilize, the specified frameworks of institutions. And And I feel like your artwork is doing that. You know, it's speaking in a way that hasn't really been spoken out before, and you're doing it rooted in tradition with Kathak dance, and you know, and you're healing with it at the same time. So I really enjoy your perspective on the difficult situations that you translate through your art form. So I commend you on that.
Thank you so much. That's really kind of you.
Okay, so let's see if we can get something about what you're currently working on. Is there anything that you're excited about that you have a project going right now that you want to share?
Yeah, so I think right now a lot of what artists have been thinking about is how COVID has been impacting their work. And so I've also been kind of linking the different topics that I've talked about in the past, which is one of the big one is mental health, different social, political conflicts and things, and kind of linking them together about how COVID has kind of shown us the worst in some way of these things, but there's also been some silver linings. And so I'm kind of trying to think about what next. I think right now it will be a series of shorter pieces of different issues. I think one that has been coming up a lot, which is also South Asia focused, is just gender violence and gender inequality. And that has been in the news a lot. And I think there's a lot that needs to be said, but again, something that people avoid talking about or don't really know what to say about. So as of now, I guess nobody knows when performances will open. So it might just be shorter pieces like this that I hope can make an impact.
Well, and you also have your duets that take place in multiple regions, right? Is there any one of those that you want to bring up and speak on?
Yeah, so those have actually been really fun because I was living in Berkeley when the lockdown started. And so I'd come back to Singapore then, and I was in the middle of working with two different dances and two different pieces. And I guess when I realized that I wasn't going to be able to travel back anytime soon, we filmed them in our own places and kind of used technology and things like that to put it together, which has been, I think, pretty exciting to see artists collaborate like across borders and things, which is something we wouldn't have done before. So there's two duets up on, so my YouTube channel has all my videos as well, which is youtube.com/Sunanna Gupta, and then it's also on my social media pages. So I think those are really more just fun pieces to check out that I would encourage all the listeners to do so as well.
Yeah, it's honestly a good model for you know, younger artists who might be struggling with a way to, you know, include other people in dance, and you're able to do it. And like, I honestly can't even, like, I can't even understand how you're able to time it as good as you do, but it's like, it's like literally the people you're standing next to the person. So it works really, really well. So I think that's a really cool thing that you've been able to do, adapting to the pandemic, right? Yeah, so also we like to talk to art students directly. Some of the people who listen to the program are art students, or there may even be high school students of mine. What would you say to students if you were in front of them right now about the role of activism within arts?
So I think for any arts students or rising artists, something that I've really considered is what exactly I want to do with my art. And I think I can speak for like Kathak, at least before it was perceived as like a temple dance form, a Mughal court dance form, a stage form. But I think now we're kind of entering a different stage of the dance form where we're trying to present social messages. And I think that's important, and we have some kind of responsibility to do that across art forms, because maybe earlier you might be training as a dancer from a young age, and it was a lot of something that was passed down through generations in the family. But now I think I'm very privileged that I've been able to continue work as a full-time dancer, but also I would be a full-time student, and I've gone to Berkeley, and there I was able to study political economy and public policy. And so now I do think it's my responsibility to use this privilege that I've had to combine both the aspects and really bring out as much as I can. And I think for any art students right now, I think it's important to think about how you can use your education and really think about what you care about in the world, what you want to change. And art is, I think your podcast is such a great way to show everyone how much you can do with art, how many different messages you can put across in a lot of unique ways. And it really reaches a whole bunch of different demographics and levels of audiences. And so it can be so powerful. And I think it really just feels like such a privilege that I've been able to train in such a beautiful art form, and I've had a great education, and I want to be able to put that together. And that's something that I encourage all other artists to think about as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. We were supposed to talk about mission or vision at some point, but it actually came out in that statement. Your mission with your work, it seems to permeate through all aspects of it. And just listening to you talk to students, if you were in front of them, it's a great example of utilizing whatever it is that we have in our lives that has been blessed to us, and sharing that with other people. And I feel like, art, in especially performance art, is something that is a true shared human experience. And so when I watch Ashkenam, it doesn't matter that I haven't, thought about the India-Pakistan conflict or the Kashmiri conflict recently, or anything. I could automatically identify with the human emotion that's going on in that piece. And I could think about what it is I could do to possibly help, whether it's helping remotely or helping volunteer-wise. And I think that is... that's something that can't be monetized with art, is the pull that the pull you feel to the intended audience or the intended subjects of the piece. So thank you for providing that to your audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also wanted to add that I think for students or other artists, even if I don't think it matters if you're picking up a heavy issue or social issue, but even just kind of pursuing your art with dedication in itself, it's you're healing and working on yourself in a lot of different ways, and it encourages those around you to do the same. So I think that's also more than enough to kind of just stay true to that passion if you have it.
Yeah, sometimes the cause is you, and if that cause isn't satisfied right, then anything else can't really come of it. If you're not healed in your own way, I think that's a great perspective to have for young artists to hear. So thank you for sharing that with us. Okay, well, thank you again for joining us on the program, and can't wait to see what happens next for you and the art form of Kathak and how you take it on into other directions and, help heal people around the world. So thank you, Sunena.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was such a great conversation, and I'm so glad that we were able to connect and chat.
Absolutely. We connected across many time zones. So thank you for joining us. Special thanks to Sunena Gupta for joining us here today on Artivism Now. And thank you for gracing everyone with the healing nature of Kathak dance. And remember, all you artists out there, keep it lit. Let it flow. Let it mean something. And goodbye.